Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dream.
Talented person, I think, in the Faroe Islands, that Shout Even Shot, with a song that she sings and plays guitar to, and grabs the words from my co-host Jay Hatter to sing that song. So, hello everybody, you have joined a Team of Voices radio on Blog Talk Radio. Team of Voices is on allpoetry.com. And you can go on to allpoetry.com, get a free account, and knock on the door of the Team of Voices. And there you will find my other co-host, Deborah Lee. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm good, AP. How are you?
I am surprisingly well. And Hatter, how are you going?
Yes. Yeah, the question's always, how are you? Make sure you have a...
What?
Picking another limb off or something.
No, it is one of those sort of things that it's a bit like the Monty Python film, Hatter. You know, if I can go and hack something off, I will. But no, I've actually had a surprisingly good week.
That's good because you got to admit that black cloud following you was there for a while.
Oh, no, I mean, I've got a list of things that I have done or done to myself, ridiculously long. you know, and you know, it. I have, you know, over the years, found new and interesting ways to beat myself up. But look, in the last week, I've actually had a really good week. Yeah, and so
good.
Yeah. So, and so you know that we're sitting here saying I've got nothing new. We've done really well. Onwards and forwards with the show. Now we've got a whole heap of to the show, and it's an open poetry show, so no theme. Although not a dog, I should say. That's about the only piece, really, as long as you don't give us an adopt time, the rest of the things we can sort through. I'm going to go firstly and grab the poem from the list from our good friend Dave Prophet, because Dave has got a couple of poems tonight, and I just want to make sure we get through them. And I think we'll probably grab the one Soothsayer and put that up and do that first. Then I'll have a chat to you, Hatter, about whether you've got a poem for tonight, and if you do, whether you need me to read it. So this is Soothsayer by Dave Prophet. Goes a little bit like this. Feynman diagrams exist in the city of Cartesia on an XY axis. Enter the player's electron in the negative, positron in the positive. It was actually the electron's antiparticle with a positive charge. At the vertex of their collision, annihilation creates two photons to satisfy conservation of charge in the house of vector quantities. One photon goes into future tense, the other one in future past, not just in the grammatical sense, a massless photon moving backwards through time. The other escapes into the future. No information is lost. Its content's written in spin, and probably we don't fully understand. Soothsayer's space-time curvatures are never quite stable, pushes the balance of matter-antimatter, causing a low-yield chain reaction. Matter-antimatter reactions in Planck time cascading backwards show their pictures of the future in the present in a burst of images to the seer. Each photon, a snapshot of their time, played back like early motion picture machines, one by one after another resonating at once into the mind. Of those, we would call soothsayers, fortune tellers, witches, demigods, disguised behind the masks of religious dogma, will not stand the light of day, evaporating with the glare of mother probability's stare. Science types wouldn't admit to this if they had a mouthful, yet they can't explain it either, just passing it off as imagination in the mind of the imaginer. So you tell me, gentle reader, where does this intuition come from? It is real, it does happen, and it's not Memorex, for it's happened to me. End poem. So that was fun. Hatter, what did you think of that one? I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I'm impressed. I'm really impressed. I like the way he consistently used the terminology he's so familiar with, but the storyline, he asked the question. He drug us through the room, and then he asked the question again.
Yep.
I like
that.
Very good,
Dave. He sort of used sort of elemental to explain why there is such a thing as memory going around. It's really interesting. Jez, what did you think?
You know, I think it's really cool too, and I like a lot of the wording he used, like with the photons being a snapshot of their time played back like early motion picture machines. I thought that was really, really cool. And then lines like disguised behind masks of religious dogma will not stand the light of day, or all the scientific terminology that he puts through it that makes it seem like a science report versus just a poem.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So I think it came out.
It did build. Like
yeah,
that.
Really, really cool.
Yeah.
His brain was showing.
he does speak about a true event that transportation and time travel, the actual proton, I thought it was electron, but a proton in the same place, two different places at the same time, and it blinks away, it blinks out of phase, something like that. So he did a good job of that.
Yeah, it's a really fun piece, Dave. You made us think, and you gave us the science, and I really enjoyed it. So, good work.
Yeah.
Now, Hatter, do you have a poem for this week?
Oh, I didn't go look because I wanted to listen to Dave. But just, I can sell a dart. Go ahead and...
Yeah, go have a wander.
About me.
And... what we might do while you're doing that is do the sort of classic poem of the week, which Deb chose for us. Yeah, so I'll do that while you're away finding a place. So bear with me. So this is from, Deb's book of very clever poems. And this is by an American poet called Sarah Teasdale. And it is called There Will Come Soft Rains. And it goes a little bit like this. There will come soft rains and the smell of the ground and swallows circling with their shimmering sound and frogs in the pool singing at night and wild plum trees in tremulous white. Robins will wear their feathery fire, whistling their whims on a low fence wire, and not one will know of the war, not one will care at last when it is done. Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly. And spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone. End poem. Drew you to that poem particularly?
Well, for starters, it was the amazing descriptions and the time of year that it must have been written. Like now, I... anything for the cold to go away and to sit and listen to the critters in the stream out back, but also because towards the end there when it was talking about it wouldn't even notice if man was gone, it sort of reminds me of, the miniseries thing I saw about After People, and the earth would just start growing over things, and vines will cover houses and trees, and it'll just take everything back. And it was written long ago, but pretty profound at the thought that, and they won't even notice that we're gone. So, it was just the potent importance of it then and now. It is impressive.
Yeah, it's quite prescient, isn't it, really? Kata, did you like that one?
I'm not able to do the seven things at a time anymore. I had.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I do.
What you were on searching. That's okay. Fair enough too. Fair enough too. No, fair enough. But I actually really liked that choice, Deb. I thought really neat, lovely cadence, great, beautiful sort of easy to get the sense of the rhyme and what it was trying to do, which is always. Bloody good start, really. So, okie doke. If you're still searching, Hatter, I am going to put.
I'm just going to pick this one. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Let me put one on the board. Yeah. So this is always fun. This is from Lorient, and he's asked me.
Oh
to,
wait, aren't you going to do the one you did to it?
If you think he can, I will do it. Yeah. So, Hatter, I've done another one of those poems.
No.
It's sort of in response. Yeah, no. I've sort of done it. You can just look at the first half of the poem, because that's sort of shaped and done the same way, but with an Australian sense. And then you can forget about the other bit. Okay, so this is Cicadas and Cockatoos, and inspired by the last poem, it goes a bit like this. The sour earth with shimmy rocks once drowned whispers into sigh that glistens around. Tower cicadas hiding shadows of night glister camouflage to collections white. Cockatoos arc, their shrieks wound higher, strung past flights avoid surrounding pyre. Choose young soldiers brief respite guns among targets of friends, mothers and sons. Clowns bury childhood faces painted sea, lost animals gathered, wild stronger or free. Crowns cherished now remains long gone, crossed shadows where once hope shone. Okay, now, just look away, Hatter, for a minute. This then reverses into not 2x6, but 3x4 lines, you know, with an AB end rhyme, just for fun. I should say that rhyme was pinched from the previous poem. Shone hope once where shadows crossed, gone long remains, now cherished crowns. Free or stronger, wild gathered animals lost, see painted faces, childhood bury clowns. Sons and mothers, friends, the targets among guns, respite brief soldiers, young choose. Pyre surrounding avoid flights past strung, higher wound shrieks, there are cockatoos. What collections to camouflage blister, night of shadows hiding cicada's tower, around glisten that sigh into whispers, drowned ones, rock shimmy with earth sow. End poem. Oh, you know, Deb, what do you think?
Well, I think evil poem, extended version. I think that way extended version. And I love how you took it and made it more tailored to yourself and added in sights and sounds and scenes from Oz. And of course, you know, I'm always impressed when you show off for us, but like this is a bit above and beyond that evil poem turned. It's like a response in an evil poem wrapped in a, oh, how clever would this be? Let me show off a little kind of way.
I sort of thought so. Anyway, look, putting the reverse to one side, Hatter, did you like the sort of 6x2 couplet thing?
I see no reason, no good reason to ever do that. No, I'm impressed on how you do that, how you do those, AP. Just because I can't. I have to call
No. Well, this is a step into the wild.
I like it.
Because I've only sort of done AABB before, and I thought, well, why not? You know, go and do something.
I follow along. Thinking that I know where you're going, but somehow it I end up where I started.
No, I understand. Yeah, and you do actually. So.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. So,
impressive.
Anyway.
Impressive.
Different. You know, if you're going to have a poem that reverses, why not sort of try that? Anyway, so that was what I was up to last night, because that's what you do, you know. Now, I can see, Hatter, that you have put a poem on board. My question to you, this is magic and the keeper of time, is did you want to read, or did you want me to read this for you?
I want you to read for me, please.
You want me to? I can do that? We can do that?
Yes,
sure.
Please.
Okay. So, here by Jay Hatter. And it goes a bit like this. The scene was red from the blood that stained the broken and dead, where the heartaches remained. Hidden in corners beneath the grass, the words not spoken shall ever pass. Frightened by songs that linger too long, the band shall take centre stage, turning the backs on those that don't ask, begging to turn the page. The broken are seen some time in between, dodging the sniper rounds, hearing it start, then falling apart, buried deep underground. What lessons learned will be tossed and burned in the battle where love is lost? Empty of rooms that were once my concern, wondering what it will cost. Battle-worn trusts come free to us, the words that follow behind. A saviour has brought what many had thought, the magic and the keeper of time.
Thank you, AP.
Pleasure. That was fun. Deb, do you want to say a few words first, and then I will have a chat about this poem?
Yeah, absolutely. That one, aside from oozing emotion, is in spot on Hatter Rhyme, which I know how much easier it is to read for him when his cadence is just like set in stone there. And I actually, to be honest, I walked in the kitchen to get a cup of coffee, so I don't have a line to quote. But like I said, I'm always blown away by the flow of your rhyme, Hatter. And great reading.
No, thanks, Deb. I'm going to say, Hatter, I really like this. It's interesting because it sort of reflected the poem that we had to start, because you had the sense of time, the sniper rounds, the lessons, the battles, and then you brought in the sort of the savior side with the magic and keeper of time, and so we're back onto time, but it's a really interesting thoughtful piece, and it does have lovely cadence and flow, and it's very, very easy to read. So, no, I enjoyed it.
You read it well, too. Thank you.
No, as I said, it's easy with your standard rhyme and rhythm to sort of sit inside the poem, which is where I think you should go if you get there. So I am heading back to Lorient, Montenegro, to read his piece Where Monarch Butterflies Tarry, which is sort of strangely appropriate for Deb being here, being a butterfly person. And it goes a little bit like this. A morning breeze from the dell shelters the green of the sward, near water spewing from a mill, flowing under the shallow ford. Crumpled leaves have cloven on the earth harsh and blind, whistling the still ferns woven behind the twigs and the rind. Betokened of the town's wheel where the bleary clouds dwine, when church bells begin to peal in the whims of a winsome shine. Henceforth the wrens croon with their songs of lively glee, the new harvest of a true boon beyond the weary barn's lee. Across wildflowers once drear, the throng of beholders gaze at a swollen abode that is near amidst glary spots that daze. Come ye hither, my child nigh, and see the wonder of the sky amongst drifting clouds high, whence comely butterflies fly along the stalks that gladden the freshest teeming flowers. You shall straightway soften by the dew of midday showers. Behold the harbingers of spring beyond the trees that are merry, swathed the overlapped wings where monarch butterflies tarry. End poem. That was fun. I like that. Deb, what did you think, being a butterfly person, of this little ode to butterflies in spring?
You know, this is absolutely beautiful. I love his descriptions. We start off with that morning breeze from Dell, and we just go with, I could just sit back and close my eyes and be packed with vivid images all throughout. Come ye hither, my child, nigh, and see the wonder of the sky amongst drifting clouds high, whence come butterflies fly. I just think it's got like a mix of old world words and vivid description, and I mean, you can't go wrong when you write a poem about a butterfly, just saying.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, I think there's too many times I've heard you get, Hannah, what did you think of that piece?
I am always impressed with Lawrence's talent. I mean, he gets it. He knows
he knows how to write poetry. He's solid. I mean, I'm impressed.
Yeah, no, agreed. Just lovely words, beautiful flow. And he always introduces us to something different. So now I might do Titus next, talking about, you know, people who know exactly what they're doing when they put a poem together. You know, the person I think about in our group that has that skill and that art, more importantly, is Titus. I think he has a lovely feel for poetry, and he has a lovely sense of how that
class,
of how that
up.
Feel should be.
Class is the place up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what he does is that he thinks really carefully about every poem, Pater, and he thought what he's trying to do, and then he chooses a piece of music or something that actually helps with that. So he's just a tremendous communicator. And I have got a SoundCloud, but before I do that, I've got two people on. Hello, 503.
503.
Yes. Hello, 503.
Hey, Pete. This is Dave.
Hey, Dave. We've already done one of your times, for God's sake. You know. But great to have you with us, by the way. And because we want another of your poems to go. So we'll give you another poem. And then I've got a series of ones. Is that you, Rack?
That's Rack.
Yeah,
Rack is back.
Rack. How are you?
Rack is back.
Rack is back.
Hey.
Rack is back.
Was that Deb's voice in the background? Hey, Deb.
And
I can hear you.
Facts and
hey. You got the whole crew. The Three Musketeers. AP, Hatter, and Debs.
That's it. And Dave. But we don't lack, which is handy, you know. So, so I was going to go and do the SoundCloud for Titus. It's a long SoundCloud, by the way. It's a long SoundCloud. So I think I've put his piece on the board. I have. So let's go and play that now.
Judgment of Paris, Chant Royal. Location, Museo di Malaga. At the wedding of Peleus and Thetis. Vita and Adupita Calliste. To the fairest, you'll proceed to reason with a purpose, a richly goad far be worse than tis light-hearted, to conjugate, to seek attempt thus, refusing to purport some lurid insight, and yet loathe thyself as one voice, no less likelihood, for beauty be plentiful, I guess, he'll surely hope to befit Theria, exuent Eris. When one claims he doubt vanity would bring Hermes to confide with news, misgivings each, takes away whose need he'd choose to pry, he'd find just one remaining to beseech, that hour has come to the gods of Olympus, should he so choosing who to forage in fight. Love rest assures my hunger, frustrous, the instrumental gift of morning light. So Paris, how will it hurt love's fairness? Beauty's charm, it is cherished, faultless, enamored by no means should pangs defy. She'll listen unperturbed, you think she'll reply? Close behind, presenting a partial speech, where's Hera, obtuse, obscuring a sigh, you'll find one's love remaining to beseech. How Athena's coy seems now flirtatious, hides half amongst the throng by to light the search for a man who is not Iopus, whose haunted shelter, frailsome, is uptight, her skill shows wry, a courtship in recess, and wisdom questions why aught I can face, her needs curtail behind that courtly sigh, you'll be in Hera's arms to adore the fire, I forfeited the feeling, she's a peach. At war, uniquely of sweet or divine, I'll find that one remaining to beseech. Should Aphrodite leave conspicuous a naked prowl, her eyes they cower sprite, she'll reign over men more adventurous, best to suit the rest who would reignite. No flame from passion lest they are acquiesce, more thrill thereon beholding slain from yes. She'll ask if none so judge her, none too shy, how women might expose themselves imply, if bold then Paris, break the ice by each, two breasts his eyes hold firm on would untie, he'd find just one remaining to beseech. Not for the sake of winning it seems cautious, judging himself first of many politely led, it can be thoughtful, outright, clean alas, when hiding things of prowess are delighted. If behind evading blind death no less, reframes her barriers with affronts of breast, and generous in ways the showing thigh, anticipates her, shown as inspired by, openly shown what can become of reach, that longing holds the herd to heed too high, find just one remaining to beseech. By the account of acquaintance hereby betwixt that gather, as one makes a sigh of pleasure from the outcome, to besiege not to, then near to what is you and cry, he'd find just one remaining to besiege.
Well, there you go. Now, I said it was long. What I didn't say is it's actually a form I've never heard of before. This is a chant royal, and it's a poetic form. It's got a rhyme scheme. It's got 5 11 line stanzas and then an envoy at the end. But its rhyme scheme is ABAB double C double D E D E, and it was very popular in the 15th century in France. Now, this is kind of fun. The complexity of the form caused William Caswell Jones to describe it as impractical for common use. The chant royal was the most complicated form of poetry in northern France during the 15th century, but not as complex as the sestina, which was popular in southern France. So you had the sestina going on in the southern France, you had the chant royal going on in northern France. So there you go. Kind of fun. Rath, what did you think of that piece by Titus and the chant royal? What's more?
I always, listen. When I listen to Titus, I hope some of his brilliance rubs off. He's wonderful to listen to. It's funny. I was messing with, I won't call it a similar form because I caught the ABAB and then the double C double D. Mm. I was trying to do something similar to that, but it was only a couple of verses long when I was done, and it wasn't so cohesive, so I kind of tricked what I came up with. But, I was toying with that idea because, that rhyme scheme kind of appeals to me. It's very flexible, too. So, it's one of those the punctuation changes a little bit.
Shut
little
up,
bit. But he's always, you could always count on him to teach you something or some brilliance is going to rub off. Love your work, Titus.
So thank you, Titus, for introducing me to another form. Kind of fun. Deb, what did you think of this piece by Titus?
For starters, I'd never heard of this either, and I mean, that's not an easy feat, those giant stanzas there. And I love, right from the beginning, you'll proceed to reason with a purpose, a richly goad, far be worse than tis slight. And I think that is the classiest way I've ever heard someone write about being slighted or being ignored or overlooked in this case. And that just blew me away. And as you went on with the detail, you could feel the disappointment. And I think it's mixed of anger there, to say the least. And I like, where was it? In the second one, Halathina's coy seems now flirtatious, which means, you know, it's getting a little more blatant. I just think that this is an amazing story. And like I said, to go on with those big stanzas, it's incredible. And it also makes me wonder, because at the top there, it says chorus, where I read about the richly clothed and to slight. I wonder if this is also something that could be, like, sung with harp music playing in the background or something.
It's
really awesome.
Great.
Very much.
Pat, what did you think of this place?
Yeah, he blows me away every time. I always say he classes the place up. Explain to me again. You said about the different way, a different styles was. I'm
Chant Royal.
You're breaking up to me.
When I was reading about this, because I've never heard about the form, but there's a very complicated form that I've done a couple of, called a sestina, which has a rotating final sort of word and doesn't internally rhyme, and it sort of has 6x6 and then a sort of 3-line envoi, and it's ridiculously hard to get right. And I've seen Titus do a number of those, but I've never seen him do a Chant Royal, and I actually didn't know it was a form, so I had to look it up because I wasn't sure. And basically, this is a story of northern France versus southern France. Southern France got on to do the sestina in the 1400s and was very popular, and northern France went on to chant royals, and both of them are incredibly complicated in their own way, and very hard because of the setup of the poem to get it to tell a story. But see, Titus does it both ways, which is very clever.
That's interesting.
I was going to ask, like mentioned,
features of stuff. He always features his stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Luckily,
yeah, and that
needs to call in.
That's
call in once we can pick his brain.
Yeah, they feature stuff. Dave, what did you think of Titus's piece? Hello, Dave. Are you there?
Right.
Hello, Dave.
He's coming off mute.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking to my mute button again. Anyhow, I just, like I said to my mute button, the technicalities of this poem sort of escaped me. I don't understand all of the different types of forms and all of that. I thought it was a fantastic description of people in general, you know, and how they're interacting with each other. Titus always gives us interesting ideas and storylines along those lines. And so I thought it was pretty neat, really. That's all about all
Absolutely.
I can say about it. I'm pretty stupid when it comes to this stuff.
No, it's a good stuff. I think it's really, really clever, you know, intelligent poem, and it's beautifully written. Now, we have your second piece, Dave. Did you want to read that for us?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely, I will.
So
I missed it last week. So let's see here.
Hold on. Let me so I can put it on the board for you.
Okay.
We are here. Now, we've already gone and I've already gone and read a piece for you, so you'd be able to sort of put that back in the, I think it was Soothsayer that I read. So...
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, well, hold on, yeah. Which one was it that I read? I'm just trying to get it right now. Yes, I definitely
read
Soothsayer.
You read Soothsayer.
Yeah.
If you look at the master list, I've been taking them away as they were read. So if it's there, it hasn't been read
yet. Well, that's
it's like
the only
like the
problem
third
is
poem on
that
the
I'm
list
just
right
looking
now.
At that. I'm just. Can you grab it for me, Deb? Because I'm just looking at it, and it's the one that's on the board is on the topic board is still. Oh, here we go. No, you're right. No, I'm
there it is.
I did put it on the board, but like I said, at the very top of the list. Is
perfect.
Current.
I got it.
You think. Well done. Thanks, Deb.
Yeah.
We've got your poem there. Dogs and Heaven. So?
Yeah, that's it. this one really, really hit me dead center. I mean, I've had so many dogs. I've lost so many dogs. And I always said that it was harder to lose a dog than it was a human. And I still believe that to this day. So anyway, this one's called Dogs in Heaven. Segue into the outdoor, this one way forever before God created dogs and he blessed them. And so they came into our hearts. For I have lost 1,001 of them. I've lost that race to heaven, the most difficult of all losses. I carry them all at such costs. Humans' best friends are only true friends. Their loyalties never end, wagging tails that always send love through smiling eyes, panting wigwags of old wiggle butts, pedigrees or plain mutts. They're all the same inside. God's love there resides. Don't know how to lie. We'll always try to find their way inside your special place to hide. Just you and your dog playing inside a mountain meadow, your overgrown lap dog. There's something holy in dogs. Only God knows, as your dog knows. All those angels and demagogues, these canines with the truest hearts, you will never know of a dog in hell. All dogs go to heaven, pray tell. This law of the universe, souls of their owners reimbursed. If my dogs aren't in heaven, then send me to where they are. End poem.
Well, you can tell the minute you started that, Dave, that one was close to home for you. And there is something incredibly special about that bond. And that incredible bond between a person and a dog. And I think you've captured that incredibly well.
Correct.
Thank you.
This is an excellent piece, Dave. I mean, I love the topic because, you know, that when you say unconditional love, you know, that's a dog. The dog's like the only animal. You can kick him in the teeth, and 5 minutes later, he'll come up and start licking your face anyway. I mean, they're just incredible. You know, faithful, all those words, they're just so giving. I mean, obviously there's all ends of the spectrum and different kinds, but like you said, you know, pedigrees are much alike. They end up worming their way into your heart, and there's usually, you know, whoever it is that they deign to call, you know, the alpha. You know, whoever it is that they let, you know, be that part of their life, you know, that person knows them in a way that no one else ever will. You know, they'll do things for them that you know, someone else can be like, you know, look what I taught them, and you'll be like, you know, you'll be able to get them to do it, and then someone else will try and do the same thing, and the dog will look at them like, are you kidding me? I mean, It makes me think too of that expression that they do, you know, when they cock their head to the side and they look at you like they're trying to figure something out. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, should I take them seriously or not? It's like that they're weighing everything, and you know, yeah. you can't help but walk away with the sense of they're smarter than they let on. You know, I mean, they learn with. And like you said, the relationship between the dogs and their people are just it's one of those bonds that's just amazing and mythical. you know, and what was it? A fable about you know, someone dying, and he's walking with his dog, and he goes past the pearly gates, and the guy's like at the gates is like, well, you can't bring the dog in here. Well, he's like, well, if the dog can't come in, then I don't want to go in. And then he keeps walking down the road, and then he comes upon, you know, someone else that says, you know, this is heaven. He's like, but I just passed the pearly gates. He's like, no, that's hell. They're just trying to trick you, you know. And he's like, no,
yeah.
He knew the dog kind of saved his life there too. You know, it's one of those things. I love that story. Say peace, Dave.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Great. Well done, Gretch here. Had up. What did you think of this poem by Dave?
Yeah, I know what you mean, Dave. It sounds terrible, but I know what you mean about it's harder to lose a dog than a family member or a person, in the sense that people know that there's an end to this place. Dogs don't. Dogs, they invest their soul, their life, their eternity into you, in you.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And when the older they get it, you owe them what you invested in them. I mean, make them comfortable. It's sad, but it's part of the contract you made when you got a pet. And that's to know what's comfortable for the best of them.
A lot of people don't realize that too. You know, a lot of
you can't just drop them. Yeah.
Don't realize. You're your dog's whole life. You're their point of interest. You're where you get your food from. Their entertainment, companionship, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people get a dog and then they stick it outside on a leash in a doghouse, and that's where it stays. And that irritates me to no end. And I don't have any friends like that.
Yeah. Or when you're done with them, when they're done with them, they take them to the pound and leave them. What do you think that does to that dog?
No
just
shit.
Leaving them there?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
Where are you going?
Mm-hmm. I can
well,
no more do that. You fly to the moon.
The quality of dog you get is the time you invest in it. When they're a puppy, you don't invest any time in it to train them. Then it's your fault, not theirs.
Yeah, that's it. And all of these bad pit bulls and stuff, all they are is a product of their environment. You know, if these drug dealers and stuff get these pit bulls or some sort of a status symbol or, you know, hey, I'm bad news kind of thing, then they mistreat them and stuff, and then you've got a walk and talk and liability on your hands. And you know, and then people say, well, I would never pit bull because they're dangerous. they're only what you make them to be. That's it, you know.
Yeah. They learn their behavior by what pleases you. So if that's what they think pleases you, that's what they're going
right.
to do.
Yep, that's right. That's
exactly
right.
We've bred them to please us.
So that's not even a breeding thing. I think that's their nature.
Yeah, well, it is now.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I mean,
thank you, guys. Thank you. Head up.
Some breeds are better.
Thank you for that wonderful part.
Shut up. It is. It was.
Now, I am going to keep on going. I think this poem, what we'll do next, is from quick look. It is, I think it's Jenny. And I don't think we have a stamp up, Jenny. So I think in that particular instance, we will read. And that being the case, I have put it up on the board. This is a Mama Bear's Devotion. Similar topic, aren't we? By Jenny the Deep. And it goes a little bit like this. Mama Bear has been unleashed from her cage with it. His years of repressed rage, a feral weasel infected from rabies, messed with the wrong mum and her baby. My precious cub is not ugly or dumb. Your heart is just jealous and smug. How dare you toxically spread your hate all over the internet where it can't be erased. My daughter is my one and only motivation, no time to waste my life in hibernation. When all you do is hurl hurtful words, it makes me want to take you out of this world. We will not be feared into staying in our cave. Jokes on you when you see my furious end poem. That's interesting. I liked. Dev, what did you think? Mama Bear. I think you've been there before.
Yeah, you know, I found myself, as you went on reading and I listened to her words, wondering if it's true. And then I looked and I see family and love and sad. And I am sadly familiar with a child being bullied, and I know the heartbreak, I know the anger, it does motivate you to do something or say something that you didn't think you would in defense of your child, like a mama bear. So yeah, I think this is both.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Steph. Dave, did you want to say a few words about this one?
I sure do. I really like this. I like how it started out, and it kind of caught my attention a little bit, and I thought, well, I'm going to hear about a mama bear, and then it kind of switched polarity on us on the last couple of stanzas. And, you know, some young women are so ornery. I mean, it seems like they're really catty when they're, I don't know, maybe 14 to 16, maybe. I don't know if there's an age group there. But, you know, I've often heard of young women telling other women to go kill themselves. Well, some of these girls aren't really that stable, you know, and if you tell somebody that, they're likely to do it. You know, especially if they've been rejected 900 times and then some little piece of crap comes along and says, well, why don't you go kill yourself?
Yep.
Sometimes that's all it takes to, you know, break the camel's back. If I had a daughter that said something like that, I'd wash her mouth out with a bar of soap. I swear to God there's no reason for that kind of talk. You know, it's a lot easier to be nice than it is to be shitty. To be put it bluntly.
Yeah, not true. Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you.
It's a great poem.
Pat, what did you think of that piece by Jenny? Let me have a look. Hold on. You might have...
Unmute, Hatter.
No? Still there. Hatter, are you there? No? Maybe not. Okay. You're not there. I can't get you to talk. Rax, what did you think of that piece?
I mean, from the title, I kind of knew where she was going. And to me, when you talk about this kind of subject, the key word is mama bear. It's not that the kid can't defend themselves. It's not even the situations that they get into. It's that, you know, a mama's going to protect someone that's not able to do it themselves necessarily, or, you know, it's not even that they can't, whether they can or can't. It's just, you know, that's their job is to take care of them and to make sure that they're safe and, you know, not get into a situation that they can't get out of. You know, the idea of protecting them, you know, they don't necessarily know better. The idea of the situations that some people get into and the cruelty of some other people, it's just, you know, well, you know, you're going to defend them to your last breath, because that's what it means to be, you know, in that kind of a situation, that kind of relationship. I love that thought and that protectiveness, that sense of family that comes with that idea of being a mama bear. And, you know, those are all things that she brought out in the poem. It's like, you know, you're not going to be for this world very long if you come after my kid, you know. And it doesn't matter if the kid can defend himself or not. It's like, I'm taking you out, you know. It's like this. I'm making sure. You know, and that's kind of a comforting thing too, you know, for on both sides.
No.
And it,
it's a beautiful sense of relationship when you know that you got someone's got your back like that. And you just, you know, sometimes no matter how old you are, you know, mom is still going to be mama. So, you know, you just want that comfort of being, you know, in her arms and knowing that feeling of being safe.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Great comment, Rack. And I'm not sure if you got to hear that piece or not, Hatter, because you dropped. Did you hear that piece or not?
Was it was Jenny's?
Yes.
Jenny's. Yeah.
I'm glad. Yeah, I wanted to comment on that. She invokes that. You can tell by the conversation she evokes that rage in all of us about how we would protect our own. There's a great story about a Boston Red Sox pitcher, Tim Wakefield, if you remember his name. His daughter was being harassed, bullied on the internet, and they were relentless. She ended up coming to her parents saying, asking for help. And so he read these emails, messages, tweets, whatever that was sent to her. And he made it his, he had just retired, and he had just gotten the MVP in the World Series, not but a few years before. So this man had nothing better to do when he went after these guys, and each one by one, there was like four or five of them. One by one, he went and exposed them, and what their bosses did, or their spouses did, was up to them. He didn't set anybody up. He just exposed them, and it was great because two of them had really good jobs. But they had a real father. They wanted to learn how to get, you know, how to find these guys that was bullying his daughter, because his daughter was now under psych care. He was worried about committing suicide. That was that bad. So, and he writes a story about it. Tim Wakefield is his name. You can look it up and tell the story. It's very good.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. Thanks for those comments too. Okay. Now, Deb, I think we've got a couple more to go. I've just put the piece up, if we have a look, by Lawrence 67. So I was going to read the Lawrence 67 piece and then finish with the song by Buddha. Is that it? Now, the only thing about that is, Rack, I haven't asked you whether you've got a poem you wanted to put on tonight.
I'm good. I'll just hang out and comment.
You
okay?
That's
cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Awesome.
I have a question though.
Okay. Well, if that
can you not see the master list, because I see Lawrence on the board, but then I see three poems that need to be read and then a recording by Budo that are still on the list.
Okay. Cool.
It's the very first comment.
So
that's
what
my picture.
Got it. So there's three more poems that need to be read after this one. Yeah, that's fine. Got it. Thanks, Steph. Okay, so let's do Lawrence 67 now. This is the ongoing adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie Alfie in My Aching Biscuits, and it goes a bit like this. Alfie, hey, Nigel, look, that little boy wants to play with us. Nigel, no, don't do it, Alfie. That's little Adolf, and he's a mean, ornery demon. Alfie, oh, Nigel, that sweet little boy couldn't hurt a flea. Come on, I'm going to go over so he can bet me. Nigel, wouldn't do that, Alfie. Watch out, he's got that big glider. Alfie, oh, shoot, my biscuits is burning. Nigel, run, Alfie, run. Alfie, damn, I've got to find some water. Nigel, here, Alfie, sit in this bird bath. Oh, yeah, oh, wee, that little brat, wait till I see him again. I'm going to scratch his eyes out. Oh, my aching biscuits. Ken Pong. The ongoing adventures of the Nigel and his homie Alfie, and in this particular case, somebody you couldn't get very close to. Anyway, there you go. What did you think?
Who did you say?
He kind of tried.
I said you did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear a name. For one, I really like the title, My Aching Biscuits. But Yeah, where is it? Oh, shoot, my biscuit is burning. Run, Alfie, run. Damn, I got to find some water. It just, the little back and forth is always fun, and you get a giggle, and still, at the end of one of these, I just imagine the kind of fun he has writing them, where he takes these little ditties, and he's got, like, exactly 276 of them. So if you're not enjoying yourself when you write something, you're not writing 276 versions. So I get a kick out of thinking about him having a blast. Fun share.
There you go. Thanks, Dave. Dave, what do you think of that little piece?
Well, it made me laugh. I always like the adventures of Nigel and Alfie from Lawrence. He's always puts a smile on my face. He always adds a little bit of levity into the show, and that's a good thing. right away from the get-go, the second or third line, it says, no, don't do it, Alfie. That's little Adolf, and he's a mean ornery demon. Yeah, you know, somebody should make more fun of that guy. You know, I mean, he begs for it, and so I'm glad to see that Lawrence put him into this story. It's fun. It's fun to read. It's real, you know, has a real short storyline to it, but it's directed to the point and makes you think a little bit and makes you laugh a lot. So I like this a lot. I thought it was really cool.
Thanks. Great comment. Rat, what did you think of this little place?
Yeah, I got to say, first off, you know, you read that really well. Your nieces and nephews must be lucky if you read to them because, you know, his conversational tone and that piece – and like he always does when he's writing Nigel and Alfie, you know, it reads kind of like a poem and a story at the same time. And you know, the adventures that they get into, there's usually something going on the end and the end that's going to, you know, he put me off biscuits with that one. But, you know, I like that expression anyway.
Correct. Ahara, what did you think of that place?
I think we lost Hatter.
Did we? Yeah, we did. We did lose Hatter. We've lost him twice in a row. Okie doke. So it's a bit hard to get him to do a comment if he's actually not on the line, Deb, you know. So anyway, let me go then to the video tape. And I am going to grab – I'm going to leave Budo's song for last because I think Budo's always a good way to finish a show because he always is different and interesting. And I am, meantime, going to put up a poem that we received from Alder Snow. Now, I don't think we've had Alder Snow on the poem on our show before. Deb, is that right?
I don't think on a Saturday yet.
No.
I think it's...
No. So...
definitely been on just a couple times,
yes.
But not Saturday.
Yeah. Okay. No. So this is We Were Cultivars of Freedom, and it goes with live like this. Mom always wanted to be part of a band. Maybe that is why she was always moving house, trying to set her inner diva free. At 6 foot tall, she stood up like a periscope, torpedoes at the ready. Dad's baritone saxophone often took the lead. He kept the bridge wailing out of the melody. His tank-shaped diaphragm could create cymatic patters in your very bone marrow. Once I heard he even cracked the prison wall. My big sister played bass, including stand-up. She could spin and move that giant violin like she was on Dancing with the Stars. Our youngest brother played drums, soft as a kitten on a windowsill, or as loud as a locomotive. He kept us up all the time. Of course, I wrote the lyrics. I loved writing. When puberty hit, pouring down on me like a tropical storm, sparking my hair in the rain. I found the funk blue groove, blues groove, and our new name, Midnight Raven. We used to be called Evergreen Ginger after Mum's charismatic stage presence. Together with livid, vibrant, sonic colour, the black and white thinking. We were always reaching up to some ideal world of our own creation. As my brother said, we were cultivars of freedom. One of the most popular songs, Raspberry Iceberg. a song about keeping your cool. And hey, Cupid, watch this, Mum's favourite. We played all three at almost every show. Our dog ran security for the equipment and us as well, the only animal I ever knew who didn't hate smoke. I miss those days and our parents and poem. Hey, that was fun. Lots of self-reflection and great imagery, and I love the comparison of musical instruments. Deb, what did you think of that piece?
Well, for starters, I think it was pretty cool that we ended with the dog there. I think I said to you before, somehow, the even on open poetry, the topics accidentally coincide with each other. But I like this because it felt like a walk through memories, excuse me, like little snippets of things that happened and like a combination of nostalgia and longing for those lost. And the nod to the Raspberry Iceberg song that was Mom's favorite. It was endearing.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't here. Rack, what did you think of that piece?
That was very nostalgic. I really enjoyed it. It sounded somewhat, you know, autobiographical too. You know, whether it's fact or fiction. But you know, I can imagine them having a band, and you know, it makes you kind of want to hang out with them the way that he describes it. You know, is very tight knit and mellow kind of feeling. It really just was very heartwarming, beautifully written.
Agree. Yeah, no, agree, Greg. I think you're right. Thank you. And Dave, what did you think of that quiz?
Dave,
are you still there?
Sorry. That mute button's got the best of me tonight. Anyway, I really loved this poem. It reminded me so much of my own family. My mother used to play the piano. My dad played tenor sax, and it was an old saxophone, and the pads on it were haywire, and it used to leak, and he would try his best to make it play. And sooner or later, he'd get disgusted with it, and then he'd just start clowning around on it. And we all started laughing so hard we couldn't even play anymore. You know, I used to play trumpet when I was in high school and all the way through grade school. So I played it for almost 8 years. And so I'd be on trumpet. My dad would be on the saxophone. My mother would be on a piano. And then one of the neighbor kids would come over, and they always liked to sing along with us. They didn't know what we were doing, but they sang along with us. And, you know, I remember that. And this poem brought up all of those memories right back, you know. And I just think that was super. You know, I really liked it. And I'm glad somebody, you know, wrote this down and you know, posted it. It's perfect. Well done.
Yeah. No, great comment. Thank you. And, yeah, it was a good poem, so thank you for sending that in. And we are now turning to a poem by Addie Bookworms, who I think gave us one a couple of weeks ago. This is Dancing Free, and it goes a little bit like this. From my window in the rain, I saw a girl dancing in the lane. Her smile began to wane as she moved her body in pain. Lost in her own world, she twirled and spun. Under the grey sky, she danced to send her geist unbound. Each step of her spoke of the battle she fought, moving on the wet road as if in a drought. As the rain poured heavily, her turmoil did cease, now dancing in the lane, as she finds fleeting peace. End poem. Rack, what did you think of that piece?
I always try and when I hear things about like the weather and dancing in the rain, I try and use it as a metaphor rather than literally thinking of somebody, you know, dancing in the rain. There's a lot of question when you talk about something like that, and the fact that she's dancing and she's walking sure-footedly and she's not slipping. It's like, you know, it's someone you know working through something
to me, that is someone that's working through something that's difficult and hard to do, but they're not, you know, letting it beat them. And it's a very hopeful piece in that regard too. But, you know, at the same time, the sadness that surrounds it, it weighs on you. It weighs on me, you know, because when you see somebody that's in pain like that too, it tugs at you. And it's hard to watch sometimes, you know, whether you know them well or not. It's just, you know, you I don't know, some people's nature. I'm one of those people, it's like, I want to fix it. If you just tried this or if you just did that or, you know, whatever. So when I hear about somebody struggling like that, it always gets to me. And that was very well written. I really enjoyed the metaphor, looking out the window and watching someone dancing in the rain. You know, it was a great piece.
Thanks,
Rob.
Excellent comment. And Dave, did you
want to
comment on this
one? Yeah, I really like this poem. There's a lot, you know, I agree with what Rack said about it, and there's a nice message in it as well. The only thing I can say is, this girl would not be outside dancing in Oregon rain, because it would be like 36 degrees outside and horizontal rain more than vertical. It's no fun. People in Oregon go out of their way to stay out of the rain. But anyway, I understand the metaphors and the usage of it here. And, you know, if I see somebody struggling like this, just like Rack, I want to help them, you know. I want to fix it and get them over that hurdle, you know. But sometimes that's their own thing, that they their own cross to bear. They have to do that by themselves, and it's painful to watch, but sometimes that's the only way it works. So this is a beautiful, beautiful poem, and I'm really pleased that this person submitted it.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Thank you. And Deb, did you
want
to say a few words about this place?
Yeah, you know, I love the title, and you see Dancing Free, and you think of something wonderful, and when you read, when you listen, and you realize that they're looking out the window, especially at the part where her smile began to wane as she moved her body in pain, lost in a world. She twirled and spun under the gray sky. She danced. You could feel her pain, her sadness, her loneliness, and I didn't feel like she was being silly and dancing in the rain. I felt like she was maybe trying to hide her tears. I think it's a powerful brevity.
Thanks, Deb. That's a really interesting point. So thank you, Addie. And we now move to... Lockdown, Lux, I think we're up to, and I'm going to read his poem called A Wonder Wander, and it goes a little bit like this. I wonder, in the past, did a creator sing? A scientist, perhaps, experimental mishaps, an explosion in nothing, and was he killed in the blast? I wonder, an alternate invention, could there be a maker of this huge universe song who, when bored, moved along to seek pastures new or forsake her, and now in a different dimension? I wonder about the connection between time and space, only histories in the night skies, is how the speed of light flies, and will other life reach our place? Maybe that will be our direction. I wonder about billions of years. We're not even a percent, but we think we're the thing, forever those destined to sing, who think they're heaven sent, passing down DNA of their tears. I wonder, what else shall I do today? Get a shower and a bite, then meet a few friends, a joke or talk trends, filling day and night, my part in the play. I wonder, what do you wonder? In pomp. Deb, what did you think of this one? It's a very interesting, intricate little piece of rhyming nostalgia almost. Deb, what do you think?
You know, I really like that each one starts with I wonder, and then he expands on that. But I also, I really like the end there. I wonder, what do you wonder? I love that he ended it with a question. And you would, at least I paused to think about it for a minute, you know. But he went from an alternate invention could be their maker of this huge universe song. But I wonder about the connection between time and space, only history in the night sky. I mean, I thought it was really cool how you could see him pondering through each stanza. Very interesting piece.
Dave, what did you think of this one?
Well, I agree with what Deborah said about it. Really, really cool. You know, starting each stanza out with I wonder creates a little sub-story in each one of these stanzas, you know. I mean, he takes you from one thing. It says, I wonder in the past, did a creator sing a scientist perhaps experimental mishaps, an explosion in nothing, and he was killed in the blast. And then it goes down to the next stanza, the alternate invention, could there be a maker of this huge universe song who, when bored, moved along to seek pastures, knew a forsaker, and now in a different dimension. Each time you go to the next stanza, it gives you something to think about. And I think that's brilliant, writing like that. It involves the reader a lot more into the poem than just coming out and, you know, and telling the story. And I agree with what Deb said right at the back end of it, or the tail end of it here. It says, I wonder, what do you wonder? I like ending some of my poems that way. I haven't done that too much, but every now and then I do. And this was really a cool poem. I liked it. It was really gave me pause here to think about things.
That's a really positive comment and a great comment, Dave. Rat, what did you think?
This is a tough one for me for a couple of reasons. You know, it's hard to be contemplative sometimes. I kind of learned when you're trying to talk about a topic and you want to be philosophical and serious, if you rhyme, it somewhat detracts from it a little bit. It seems more sing-songy than it does contemplative, and I think it detracts a little bit from the message, from the point that the poem is making. But he did a great job with the rhyme and flow of it, you know. And if I wasn't such a smartass, you know, I the minute I heard I wonder, my mind went to the Runaway song. And the high pitched voice going wow 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 wonder, but you know, and that's just me. And then when he ended with that question, I wanted to say, I wonder if you got enough bread to sit around and wonder about everything, you know, what kind of job do you have? But you know, that's just because, you know, as his audience, you know, I'm not the kind of audience for a poem like this. So I enjoyed it. He did a great job with the form and everything else, and I like the idea of bookending. You know, he started with wonder, he ended with wonder, and like Deb said, you know, it's great to have each little kind of vignette, like I wonder this, and then you go into the story of it and that. But you know, sometimes I think it's more powerful instead of rhyming it to kind of free verse it. But you know, if you're not that kind of poet, you're not that kind of poet. I mean, he did an excellent job with it, though. It was still a good poem. Don't listen to me.
No, a free-form comment. I appreciate it. So, now, Deb, before I go to Buddha, I wanted to get you to say a few words about what's coming up on A Team of Voices.
I can do that. So tomorrow night at 9:30, we have JCA on Sunday Night Murder and Mayhem. And I found his prompt fascinating this week. It's on the Persian princess. I'm not going to say too much about it, but he's got some videos to check out. It turns out that, you know, they had said they found this mummy, and that it was of a Persian princess. And, I mean, it was extremely elaborate. And then there was a shocking twist. And if you want to find out what that twist is, check out Jay's topic.
You've got to go to it.
And again, that's tomorrow at 9:30. And then on Monday, on Personal Prompt Monday, I am featuring a photographer who takes some really gorgeous pictures. Where's his name? Mark Papke. And this will be the last one of photographs for a bit. I'm going to go into a color series after that. So check out the art. It's beautiful. It's from around the world. See what speaks to you, Monday at 10. And that's the next two nights. I'm trying to see if there is a Tuesday. Might be a Hatter. I'm headed to the meeting room to see what March says here. And it says, that is the 5th. And there's a question mark there. I don't know. So we will leave that one alone. And Sky will be there Wednesday. And
okay, cool.
That's the next few dates.
Perfect. Okie doke. Well, I am going to go to the recording that Buddha shared with us, and great to have you with us again, Buddha. And I've got the palm, or the song, the palm on the board. This is the sound clip. Thank you, Buddha. I always love finishing with a song. Dave, what did you think of Buddha's piece?
Oh, I like that. I like the lyrics especially, and the melody and stuff was interesting. It's really tough to write a song and then come right around behind it with a melody. It's a lot harder than it sounds. You know, we've been shown this so many times over a century of how it's supposed to be done, the people don't understand the complexity of it and the amount of effort it takes to make it all come to where it doesn't sound sporadic, you know. And Boo's getting us down pretty good. So I'd like to jam with the guy sometime.
Yeah.
I don't know where he lives, but I'd sure like to do that.
It's a good song. Yeah, great comment.
And Rat, what did you think? I could listen to Budo all night.
I love that point. I'm not a guitarist or anything, but you know, I'm a professional listener. I could play the radio, I come to appreciate his lyrics and you know, there's certain I won't call them commercial, but just certain things that kind of, you know, the triggers for me that I just really, really love. The tempo changes and when the guitar does that kind of singing point, it almost squeals, and it gets to the point where I get so, you know, swept away by the music, I get confused as to what instrument am I listening to right now, because, you know, maybe that's a keyboard. No, that's guitar still. And he's got a way of making the guitar sing for me, and I just really enjoy listening to him. Great piece, Budo.
Thanks, Rack. Great comment. Deb, you've got the final word tonight. What did you think?
You know, I like how he went from being... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep, got it now.
Okay. I like how he went from the beginning where he's beat up and bruised and battered to the middle where he took that fall, but he rose back up again and he won't give in. And I like the uplifting ending where he's going to survive. It'll be me and myself and I'll beat it. I'll get by. I'll survive. And the musical arrangement was pretty wicked. Great job.
Great. Thanks, Bula. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. So got to that point in the evening where I thank Hatter and Deb very much for being with me, and thank Dave and Rack for joining us for all the show, and say been great to have you with us. Thanks, folks.
Awesome show.
And
love and respect, everyone.
We say that to Deb, and we then put ourselves in the place where, when I first learned how to do this stuff, I had my own theme. And it was from a very nice band in Australia called Ice House. This is Electric Blue. Talk soon, everybody.
Are you hiding?
such a great song. We will see you back at the same bat time, the same bat channel next week for more Open Poetry with AP and the crew from Team the Voices. Until then, have a great week, and we'll catch you down the line. Thanks, everybody.